continue because we now have the Cinema Judge.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Judge. I really appreciate you stopping in. All my regulars, welcome back. And if you're new to the show, here's what the show is in a nutshell. I love movies. I like to share movies. I collect evidence. I have interviews, scenes, on-the-set footage. I put it together to make one giant infomercial. I don't tell you not to see a movie. I give you the evidence so you can make up your own mind. I'm not going to be here yelling at Hollywood, criticizing people. That's not my jam here. I'd like to share movies with people who love movies. Consider this like a movie oasis, a little bubble away from all the world around us. We all have problems. We all have issues. But this is one little place where you could just come back in here and just learn about movies. It's a nice little escape. Because in the end, it's really this simple. It comes down to this. Any movie is somebody's favorite movie. Now, approaching the bench today, we have the Marvel extravaganza, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, starring Benedict Cumberbatch, Elizabeth Olsen, and directed by the master himself, the great Sam Raimi. Here's the trailer.
Don't cast that spell. It's too dangerous.
Why? We tampered with the stability of space-time. The multiverse is a concept about which we know frightening.
Your desecration of reality will not go unpunished,
It was the only way. But I never meant for any of this to happen.
Sooner or later, you'd show up. I made mistakes, and people were hurt.
I'm not here to talk about Westview.
Then what are you here for?
I need your help.
With what?
What do you know about the multiverse? I'm sorry, Stephen.
You understand. The greatest threat to our universe is you.
Things just got out of hand.
Now, if you're unfamiliar with the storyline or anything about this movie, let me just read this brief synopsis. Dr. Stephen Strange casts a forbidden spell that opens the doorway to the multiverse, including alternate versions of himself whose threat to humanity is too great for the combined forces of Strange, Wong, and Wanda herself. Now, coming up first, we're going to have an interview from the red carpet from the mega producer, the master behind this whole MC universe, and how he keeps this all the stuff in his head, I could never imagine. But here is producer Kevin Feige.
It is. You know what? We make everything to work on their own, right? So I'm excited for people to just step into this and have a fun Sam Raimi thrilling adventure. If there are other people who are tracking the story of the MCU, a lot of this not only is from WandaVision, but from Loki. Because at the end of Loki, something happens that allows our universe to be exposed to the broader multiverse. And we saw what that can mean already in Spider-Man No Way Home, and that's what allowed the other Spideys to come here and Doctor Strange's spell to go wrong, and it's what really sets off this movie with, in particular, the character America Chavez. And that's sort of what kicks off the Multiverse of Madness.
Now, in the interview, he talked about Sam Raimi. Sam Raimi is just a legend. If you're a movie fan, movie buff like I am, you know what he's capable of and what he's done. Not just producing, but directing, writing, you name it, he can do it. Even, you know, back from the 1981 film, The Evil Dead. If you've never seen that whole trilogy, the first one actually started off as a straight-out horror film, and it was with great results. But then they made it again as a comedy. Again, just as great as a comedy. Same movie, but just done in a comedy version. And starring in those movies was his longtime friend, Bruce Campbell. And again, I could go on and on about Bruce Campbell, because that guy is a legend. And he, you name it, and those two have worked so well together. But I digress. So from The Evil Dead, then he moved on to Darkman, Army of Darkness, which is a sequel of The Evil Dead, because it goes Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness, The Quick and the Dead, A Simple Plan, For Love of the Game, The Gift, then Spider-Man, Spider-Man 2, and Spider-Man 3, Drag Me to Hell, Oz the Great and Powerful. And he also worked on a TV version of The Evil Dead called Ash versus The Evil Dead. It was a great TV show. Didn't last for very long, but it's still a great episode, great series. And again, I could go on and on with all of his talents. But in this interview, he covers a lot of information. And I'm just going to let him go, because just listen to this set of interviews, him talking about the project and everything else. It's just priceless. Check this out.
Well, I came back to direct because I really love the character of Doctor Strange. I got a call from Kevin Feige at Marvel saying that the original director had fallen out of this film and that they were looking for somebody, and would I come in and meet? And I had taken a lot of time off trying to refresh myself and develop a new vision for things, and I felt hungry and ready to make the movie. So I went ahead and took the meeting, and we were off and running from there. Yes, I always thought that the character of Doctor Strange had a lot of appeal to me. I think because he was a magician whose job it was to protect our world and our universe from magical threats. And as a kid, I was a magician, an amateur magician. I would perform for kids' parties and weddings. So I thought it was really cool that there was a superhero that was a magician, and I was naturally attracted to him. When I met with Marvel and our writer, Michael Waldron, my main goal was to be true to the previous Marvel movies that have come before, to understand where those characters were and what the next step in their growth would be. And that's really what I used to guide the working on the screenplay for this particular picture. I wanted it to please the fans, and I thought that was the best way to do that. The multiverse is a universe just like our own, but an infinite number of them that exists just in a atomically thin line. They exist simultaneously to our own, invisible, but they're there nevertheless. Well, in describing the multiverse filmically, there was a tremendous amount of art direction and design that had to go into it. What would differentiate our universe from the next and the next and the next? And we decided that each universe would have to have its own look and feel. Where would it come from? What would the buildings look like? It started with determining what the society was like. Was it an orderly society? If so, perhaps the buildings would be flatter, less expansive, less dramatic, more orderly. Same with the colors. Maybe that color palette would be toned down in accordance with this orderly world. So we made a lot of decisions in the art department, production design, wardrobe, and photography, the choice of lenses and colors that we would use, what light would be filtered how. And we defined through all these different tools of filmmaking the different looks of the different universes. Most of it was practical builds with props and wardrobe, but the extensions had to be done digitally.
Like I told you, I love that interview. He's so informative, so knowledgeable. I could just eat that stuff all day long. He's just a man. Now, up next, we're going to hear from the writer, Michael Waldron. Now, he is a very, very talented guy. He's the executive producer on Loki. And if you're familiar with the TV show Rick and Morty, he's a producer on that television show. Executive producer of Heels. So using his talents for this kind of film is just a no-brainer. And in this interview, he talks about writing for this project and writing for people who might not know anything about the multiverse.
It's any big science fiction concept is always tricky because you have to assume that your audience might not know anything about it. Fortunately, the multiverse as a concept has been out there in the world more and more over the last several years. So I think there's a general knowledge of it, but we wanted to make sure that we weren't excluding any of our audience who didn't know anything about the multiverse, and maybe you didn't know anything about Doctor Strange or Wanda. And so we tried to introduce as many points of view as possible in our movie that could represent the eyes of an audience who might not know anything about this crap, and had to learn about it along with our characters. And so, yeah, you're spinning a couple plates at once, but as long as you're keeping the humanity of your characters at the forefront, then even if they get lost in all the sci-fi mumbo-jumbo, they're still probably going to have a good time.
I really enjoy that interview. Just don't say any mumbo-jumbo. You know, he's very casual. He's not precious about all these kind of things. I love that kind of honesty when you hear from a writer or a director, you know, stuff like that. Now, talking about writing and writing for this particular project, we have Sam Raimi, the director, and he talks about the actors having other projects already being involved in this and how that altered his writing process. It just, once again, a really great interview.
Universe building is a much larger job than just world building. We had to make sure the audience understood everything about that place was similar to our own, but slightly different. So it was always about variations on a theme versus just outright construction of a new place. Yes, the actors came to Multiverse of Madness already having created their characters. Benedict Cumberbatch had created Doctor Strange in both his original Doctor Strange movie and in 6 subsequent Marvel movies. Same with Wanda. She had been in a number of Avengers movies, and also we are following her series, WandaVision. So the actors really knew their characters inside and out, and that was a different job for me as director, because now I didn't have to create them from scratch. I had to do a different job, which was presenting these characters with their altered selves. Because when you go into the multiverse, what you're actually doing is looking into a mirror, seeing either just a backwards version of yourself or a funhouse mirror version of yourself. The fact that these actors knew their characters so well enabled me to do that. They knew that by tweaking just the slightest aspect of their personality would be enough to create an interesting dynamic with their alter self.
Now, from the world premiere, we're going to hear from Sam Raimi. In this interview, he talks about, in this project, how not just people are coming in to their universe, people in this universe are going to other universes.
Characters have come out of other universes into our own in the last Spider-Man picture, No Way Home, but this will be the first time that characters from our MCU journey out into other universes. It should be pretty exciting.
From the same red carpet world premiere, we're going to hear from the writer, and he's going to talk just a little bit more about this movie.
Well, I hope they're going to have a blast. The movie's a ride, and that's how we tried to structure it and tell it, but hopefully there's also some great character moments in there as well. Well, it's insane, and it is the multiverse of madness, and it was our job to fully realize the multiverse for the first time in the MCU and create other realities and actually show what they might look and feel like in the MCU. And so that was really cool.
Mitch Bell, a producer on this film, is up next on the red carpet, and he just talks about where this film picks up at.
Well, so the cool thing is it kind of takes up after Spider-Man, right? After No Way Home. So the multiverse has kind of been introduced, right? And so now it's kind of even now further delved into this movie. And so Doctor Strange, through some magical mishaps and misfortune, shall we say, finds himself in the multiverse. And we get to see some cool new worlds.
Now, speaking of the multiverse, up next, we're going to hear from Elizabeth Olsen, who plays Wanda. And she's also going to discuss, now that the multiverse is now open, she's going to talk about the potential for all the different characters and what it might lead to in the future.
I think opening up the multiverse is going to create bottomless stories and storytelling. Not just for the characters themselves being able to become different versions with different circumstances of themselves, but also with story. I feel like it's an amazing opportunity, and I have no idea where it's going to go, but I hope I'm a part of it in some way.
What I like about that interview, if you ever watch a TV version of this, at the very end of that interview, you know, she's just like, she holds up both of her fingers and like crossing her fingers, like, ooh, I hope so. I know it's a podcast, you can't see that. But it's just, I don't know, something about that shot at the end there, she's like, oh, I hope so. It's just really kind of cool. Now, up next, we're going to hear from Benedict Cumberbatch, who plays, of course, Doctor Strange. And he's going to talk about how much he just loves playing his character. And I really feel his enthusiasm. It's not just, you know, putting on airs. I think he really digs the character. And he also talks about his character and his role in the whole MCU. And just a heads up, these set of interviews, one of them will start at the world premiere. Then we cut to a one where he's like in a controlled environment and then back to the world premiere. So in case you're listening to him, what's the deal with the whole audio on this bad boy? Well, it's just different interviews taken from different locations put together to make one. That's why you'll be hearing a little bit funkiness going on.
I love being your Doctor Strange. It's as simple as that. I do. I really enjoy it. And he's a complex and rich palette to play off. And then in this film, I get to play variants of him. And there's a whole ton of everything in this movie. It's a very crowded marquee of stuff. But yeah, we got to stress him out a little bit and stretch him and change him and reshape him.
Good. Felt like an old friend. I did it. It feels good to don the cloak of levitation, becoming master of the mystic arts again. And I did it once before in Spider-Man No Way Home before this movie. So it felt kind of very familiar. Although everything's evolved, including the costume in this one a little bit. Doctor Strange brings his own epic level of storytelling visually to the MCU by the nature of being a sorcerer, let alone when he's a gateway character to the MCU's next phase through the multiverse. So it's a very potent combination. And I think it's interesting to see someone as confident and as all-knowing and sometimes all-powerful as he seemed to be not only unfounded by mistakes in Spider-Man No Way Home, but also in this one becoming the pupil again in many ways and evolving from that experience to being a different Doctor Strange. It reveals things about himself. It reveals other versions of himself. And all of this feeds into a really already rich, complex, humorous, arrogant, funny, anarchic, chaotic, humanly frail superhero. And it spices things up and takes him in directions and stress tests him in a really positive way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. We crack that door wide open. And I'll tell you one thing about it. It's beautiful. It's very, very beautiful. So I hope they enjoy the visuals of it, at least.
Thank you.
See what I'm saying? There was some all kinds of stuff going on in that interview, or set of interviews. Up next, it's featurette time. In this featurette, the studio, they sent me a bunch of stuff, pre-recorded interviews, all smashed together to make one informative thing about the storyline and what's going on in this movie. So you're going to hear from several of the actors and people involved in this movie. But basically what it's saying is, this is what the movie's about.
I did what I had to do to protect our world.
It's pretty unfathomably exciting.
Where we're going in this film, it's the most fantastic new phase of Marvel.
What do you know about the multiverse?
Viz had his theories. He believed it was dangerous.
In this story, we are leaping into different universes. But unlocking the multiverse creates a big Pandora's box.
You open the doorway, and we don't know who or what will walk through it.
We're in unknown territory. I think audiences are going to be startled. These other realities invite a plethora of all these new characters.
Telling the stories was such a gigantic endeavor. It had to be large because it had to not only paint a picture of our universe, but of multiple universes.
We need your help.
It was a great opportunity to pair two of the most powerful superheroes together.
It's got a sort of darker tone to it. And with Sam Raimi at the helm, he's a master of that.
We wanted the fans to go, oh, how cool. I mean, that really was our goal. We wanted to give the fans what they wanted, just not exactly what they expected.
The stakes are real. He's literally coming up against versions of himself.
Things just got out of hand.
And the music in this is just incredible. And in case you're wondering who it is, Danny Elfman. And he has worked a lot with Tim Burton, just in so many other projects. The guy is just incredible. But up next, we're going to hear from the mastermind behind all this stuff, producer Kevin Feige. And he's going to talk about how they were going to work with Wanda, where they were going to originally put her, and how she worked into their ultimate plan.
At one point, one of the initial ideas we had for Doctor Strange was to introduce Scarlet Witch in the Doctor Strange movie, because those two characters were always two we really wanted to see together and sort of fit in that same world. Obviously, we end up introducing her in Ultron, and thank God we did, because we got to do all the other things with her. But this is really something that has been in the works for a very long time, and finally, here we are.
Now, coming up next, we're going to hear from Elizabeth Olsen, who plays Wanda. And in this set of interviews, she starts off talking about what happened when she received the script, and just talking about where the, you know, the character goes.
When I first found out that I was going to be in Doctor Strange, I didn't at the time know what capacity. The first time I learned about the script, however, when it was orally pitched to me, I was terrified. it felt like it felt like something I never guessed would happen. And I was excited by the challenge. We find Wanda living in isolation. I think after the experience she's had, the best way for her to grow was being okay to be alone with herself. She's gone through the Marvel Universe, having her brother and then having Vision, and now she's on her own. And to find that strength within herself is where we find her. And that happens to be a beautiful cabin with some land that she takes care of. I've been so lucky to have such incredible arcs within my journey in the MCU. It started with someone who is angsty and angry, but had a very clear perspective, who really thought she knew what she believed, and it was turned upside down. And she keeps going with it. She keeps getting knocked down, and then she has so much loss, and then she grows from it, and she tries to continue, even though that's very difficult. I've been surprised how well I've been utilized so far up until WandaVision. I took up a lane. Paul and I always talk about how we took up a lane of sincerity, love, sadness, grief. And then with WandaVision, it became this whole other three-dimensional experience with the character that I never foresaw. And I feel very grateful that I'm continuing this journey. I was really excited to get to work with Benedict. I'd never worked with him before. We had met a few times, but I'm such a fan of his work, and I was very excited to be on the inside of his process and to problem solve with him, to enjoy the struggles, enjoy the fun. It was also nice having someone who also uses their hands for power, so I wasn't the only one making it all up in my head. There was no punching. It was all just magic. And he and I both take that part of our job very seriously. And we really care about our movements and our choreography and what it means and what it looks like and how specific we want to be. And so it was nice to have that in another actor.
That's a really cool interview. You know, talking about how both these characters use their hands. They don't have weapons. They don't have all these devices. They use magic, and they, you know, have that little connection of somebody else on set who has the same kind of deal that I'm going on. And because in my mind's eye, I'm creating this stuff in my head and I see it. And, you know, she has her process. You know, he has his process. Coming up next, we're going to play another featurette. This featurette discusses a lot of Wanda, you know, Wanda stuff. Here it is.
What is grief? If not love, persevering.
Part of the madness of the multiverse is we get to see different realities. And we see different versions primarily of Doctor Strange, but we do see other versions of Wanda Maximoff.
I think WandaVision was this journey of her for the first time taking her own life into her own hands. And it was fun transitioning from her experience to this movie.
We could use an Avenger.
There are other Avengers.
We'll get you back on the lunchbox. What do you know about the multiverse?
We wanted to satisfy the WandaVision fans and take them to the next level with a character they love.
It was fun just looking at it from a different perspective.
The multiverse. Viz had his theories. He believed it was dangerous.
We need your help.
It's magical. She owns that character so well. It's a very powerful performance with a very powerful character.
In the multiverse, there are alternate versions of everyone. It gives the characters a unique opportunity to meet themselves, to recognize qualities that they may have been blind to.
The fate of the multiverse depends on us.
With the next interview, we're going to hear from Elizabeth Olsen, who plays Wanda. As of this recording of that interview, she hadn't seen the movie yet, but she was asked, what do you think the audience will expect?
I mean, I don't know what audiences are going to expect because I haven't seen the film. But what I hope audiences can expect is a new journey that opens up many more opportunities for the characters you love and for new characters. And I hope there's a thrill to it. I hope people can enjoy it in the theaters together without spoilers and be surprised by this journey. These characters go to new places that we haven't seen. And I just don't want that to be spoiled for anyone.
Now we're going to hear next from the writer. And he's going to talk about how much he enjoyed writing for the new character in this film, America Chavez, but how the character in the movie is considerably younger compared to the novel world, and you know, and what, why they chose to do that, and the whole reasoning behind that.
I was really excited to get to introduce the character of America Chavez to the MCU. She's a fierce, brash character in the comics who is much older than the version of the character that we ultimately rendered and introduced in this movie. And so it really became for us in telling the story of a 14-year-old America Chavez, this was her origin story. And you're seeing in a lot of ways, how is this character going to become the America that maybe people who are fans of the comics know and love. She's still figuring out what her powers are, how to use them, reckoning with the trauma that she's endured because of them. And so we worked hard on that and worked with Sochi Gomez, the tremendous young actor who plays America, to build that character together.
We're going to hear next from Sochi Gomez, who plays America Chavez. But also in this interview, sitting next to her is Benedict Wong, who plays Wong in this film. So when you hear them talking, it's going to be her talking sometimes and then Benedict Wong. And at first, she's going to talk about how overjoyed she was knowing she's going to work with such a great cast. And then from there, you know, from that point on, they're going to talk about the character and working with the great Sam Raimi.
What excites me the most about, you know, being part of the MCU is, you know, getting to work with the actors that I, you know, looked up to when I was younger, like Elizabeth Olsen. I mean, she is just beautiful, you know, such a talented actress. And, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch, Benedict Wong. It's pretty crazy that, you know, I get to work alongside some of the best. Yeah, America Chavez can punch and kick portals, star-shaped portals that allow her to travel between universes. And, you know, she's got some trust issues, not gonna lie. and throughout this movie, we get to see her kind of get through that and, you know, let people in. But we definitely share some things in common, of course. You know, we're both strong and we're resilient, you know, when the world is kind of coming to crush you. We're still going. I mean, Sam Raimi. He was so collaborative and sweet. And, you know, I honestly just wanted to, like, do my best for him. He made me feel like I should always do my best.
Yeah, you know? same. Yeah. You know, a legend in his own right in two genres of horror and superhero-dom.
Yeah.
And here he is helming ours. It's perfectly bespoke, suited for him. Yeah.
America's relationship with Wong and Doctor Strange is a little untrusting. You know, she does have trust issues. So at first she's kind of like, I don't know about you guys. You guys are weird. But then towards the end, she kind of slowly lets them in.
How does Wong feel when America comes barging into their world? Obviously, you know, we are baffled and puzzled by how someone can travel through and into another universe. So, and the power that she has, and possibly how we must protect her, you know, so very cautious.
Okay, guys, here's my struggle. In this next set of scenes I can play for you, there's very little dialogue. And I always struggle with this. Some people tell me, yeah, we love it when you play that. You know, because, you know, they might have seen the movie and they could see it in their mind's eye. But if you haven't seen the movie, some of this is just a lot of orchestration. And you hear noises, but you don't know what's going on in the scene. So I always have that struggle. Should I play scenes that have very little dialogue? But most people tell me, play it. We like to hear it. So that being said, let me kind of lay down the next scenes, you know, before I play them. In this first scene, we're in the middle of, like, New York Street, and you see America Chavez running towards us. And behind her, there's like this giant squid or octopus thing, you know, chasing her. And she's booking along, and then it grabs her, and Wong shows up. Ba-ba! And he shoots his magic stuff, like a lasso type, whatever the heck it is. And he, you know, pulls her to him. And then, you know, that thing keeps coming at him. And then after that, where she's in this bus and the squid thing is crushing it. And Doctor Strange there is in the road, and he helps her get out of that bus, and then he throws his cape at her, and, like, you know, and it flies her back over to him. And then the scene immediately after that, they're being tossed through, like, all these other universes, like this whoom, 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 whoom. And then they land, and he's like, ooh, are you okay? So it's really not a lot of dialogue. But it kind of, you know, sets the tone. It gives you a feeling of the drama, the adventure that is, you know, going on in these scenes. So for those of you who like this stuff, here it is. And if this frustrates you, I apologize. But here's a scene from Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
Yeah. You okay?
Like I said, there's a lot going on there, but you can't see it. But if you do want to see it, watch a TV version of this. I'll give you that website at the end of the show. Up next, we're going to hear from Benedict Cumberbatch, who plays Doctor Strange. He's going to talk about his character's voyage, and he also talks about the relationship between Doctor Strange and America Chavez.
The journey he goes on this film definitely results in him learning that he's better off together than he is alone, stronger together than alone. And I think the arrogance that carried him both as a surgeon and as a sorcerer, of thinking he had to hold the knife, he had to be in control, and that he could control everything, is really undone in this with spectacular effect, as you'll see. Dr. Strange's relationship with America Chavez, without giving away too much, is a very interesting one. And it's one where the power shifts a lot. She may be young, but she's got experience of something that he doesn't, which is the multiverse. And they help each other. It's a pretty simpatico relationship by the end. There's some arrogance on both sides, but they have their clashes, they have their moments, but they definitely, by the end, make a very, 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 very powerful team.
Now, coming up from the red carpet, we're going to hear from Xochitl Gomez, who plays America Chavez, and we're going to hear from Benedict Wong.
Yeah, I mean, it. That's probably the most shocking part of it all, is that there are people that are dressed as America Chavez, and I've been, you know, working on this project for so long, and it's just, it's so crazy that it's, like, happening, and there's, like, many, many people dressed as America. It's crazy. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. It's overwhelming. But, I mean, it's exciting because I was a huge fan of the MCU, and I watched the movies multiple times, and so getting to work with the amazing actors that, you know, Cumberbatch, Elizabeth, you know, it's Benny Wong. I mean, like, it's a dream come true, honestly, and it's just crazy that I get to be a part of it.
I just think about this sort of the advancement of these of the technology now, that we can really properly realize, like, Steve Ditko's kind of strange kaleidoscopic multiversal world, you know. So we're in for a treat, you know. Get to the cinema.
It's amazing. It's amazing, isn't it? Such dedicated, loyal fans, you know. I mean, if I wasn't here talking to you, I'd be with them, you know, so dressed as Wong, I think. It's so heartening to sort of see that loyalty, that warmth, and you know, everyone's waiting with bated breath of what's going to happen for the next installment. We do it so well. I mean, it's I read somewhere, you know, I think it was 14 years today that Iron Man began, you know, and you know, we sort of tread on the path of all the all our previous kind of writers, directors, and actors, and you know, I'm grateful to that sort of baton passing, and here we are running with it. It's a lot of fun for me. You know, I've said it time and time again, you know, I collected Marvel comics when I was 14, collecting all the Spider-Man comics. I went to Odyssey 7 in Manchester, and you know, sifting through all these comics, and just all and to be an actor, to be part of this, to be playing a character called Wong, so my ancestors are smiling. You know, it's wonderful to sort of be in alignment, and yeah, it's great.
Now, once again from the red carpet, we're going to bring you Rachel McAdams. She plays Dr. Christine Palmer, and she just talks about just the whole joy of this movie.
It's really great. It's so great to, you know, to get to work with Benedict again. I would do anything to work with him, you know, a million times over. And then to work with great new actors that I've never worked with before, like Lizzie and Xochitl. And so, you know, I was so excited about what this could be. It's a very special world, and I feel like it's become even more special now that the multiverse has been opened up. So It's quite a family, you know, dysfunctional, sometimes functional, you know, it's got all the things you kind of want out of a family tree. Oh no, you're going hook, line, and sinker into the multiverse in this one. Yes, it's, you're jumping into the portal with both feet. So it's really exciting. I think it's cracking up the Pandora's box, for better or for worse. So yeah.
Now a little bit more from the red carpet. Now, this is the order they're going to play in. First, Benedict Cumberbatch, Kevin Feige, Sam Raimi, and back to Kevin Feige. Here they are at the red carpet.
This is a moment to enjoy. This is the moment where you get to go, all right, this is with fans. This is what we do. This is why we do it. So I'm very excited to see what the reception is going to be like. Terrified,
but a nice kind of bubbly, warm, terrified rather than cold, abject fear.
They every time they get better and better to the point where I literally saw a Doctor Strange that I thought was wearing the movie costume. I thought it was a Disney person wearing the movie costume. And he goes, oh, thanks. I worked really hard on this. It wasn't. They made it themselves.
Yeah, it's incredibly exciting to see all of the artists' work come together into this movie and have it culminate in tonight, where it finally gets released to the first crowd. I'm really hoping they like it.
You know, the truth is I'm most excited for people to discover and rediscover the fun of going to the movies. I think 4 months ago, Spider-Man No Way Home did that for people. And in that same way, I can't wait to sit in a packed theater and watch hundreds and hundreds of people experience this together at one time. That's what going to the movies is all about. That's what Sam Raimi taught me on the earliest Spider-Man movies, the beginning of my Marvel career. Every decision he makes is with the audience in mind and the people watching when the lights go down, experiencing it for the first time. And I carry that with me through all of our MCU movies to now be doing a movie again with him. His first one in the official MCU is great. And that's what I'm most excited for, seeing, having a packed house experience this for the first time.
I love hearing that from a guy who he cares about the audience. It's not just about next movie, next movie, next movie. No. I care about the audience. And when he was talking about Sam Raimi, here he is, the director, Sam Raimi.
My experience working with the Marvel filmmakers and crew is fantastic. This is a company that really cares about its characters and the experience of the fan. That's number one. Other companies answer to shareholders. Marvel answers to the fan. That means they put story and integrity of characterization first. And it's a place that any director would want to work. I hope that when the audience goes to see Multiverse of Madness, they really feel as though they've left our universe behind and have taken a wild ride through these other parallel multiverses. I want them to see things they've never seen before, hear things they've never heard, and have a really unique big screen movie experience. If I had to describe the movie in one word, I would say possibilities.
Possibilities indeed. I'd love that interview. He said so much. And what I really enjoyed about that one is when he was talking about working with Marvel, you know, if you really think about it, they could be somebody who is so controlling and, you know, how some studios are. They get so many chefs in the kitchen and a movie could get completely convoluted. But I've heard countless over and over again from directors, producers, writers, they give freedom. Yes, they have like an outline. They have, this is what we kind of want to achieve, but they let the directors be them. They can still leave their fingerprint on there. It's not just a carbon copy of every movie. They allow a director to create their own tone. And to hear him talk about that is really fascinating and comforting, I guess, knowing that even going down the line, Marvel will allow directors, writers, and everybody to have their own imprint into a film. And that's what sets them apart from a lot of other franchises of this nature. And that's what's going to keep bringing great directors like Sam Raimi on board. I mean, I could go on and I could do episodes on his body of work, but the man is humble, but he's dedicated. He's focused. Everything about Sam Raimi is just wonderful. And he doesn't lick anybody's boots, blow smoke. When he says something like that, I personally believe him because he's Sam Raimi. He can work for anyone, anywhere, anytime. So it's not like he's saying, I'm just doing this just for another job. I truly believe that's his reality and the truth that he was presented with. Now, if you'd like to see the TV version of this, go to Bloomington, Minnesota's webpage. That's blm.mn/BTV-shows. And just type in Cinema Judge and a whole bunch of shows should show up. But they have some really good footage that they provided. And if you really like this movie, you might be interested in watching the TV version of it. But just a heads up, if you listen to, or if you try to find it immediately after this drops within like a day or so, it might not be up yet. It will be there, but at the exact second, it might not be. But bear with me, it will be up. Now, if you guys have any questions, comments, concerns, any way to improve the show, please feel free to let me know. cinemajudge@hotmail.com. Because I can't grow if I don't know. Or reach me on Instagram, TheCinemaJudge, or on Twitter, CinemaJudge. I would love to hear from you. Let me know what you want me to add, improve, take away. Whatever you have on your mind, feel free to let me know. But now, it's part of the show that I really, really dig. It's all about you. This is the shout-out time. So for all you listeners who listened to the last episode, I hope my voice finds you well. For those of you listening at work, at home, doing the folding the laundry, whatever you're doing, I truly love hearing about how you listen to this show. So wherever, whenever, or whatever you're doing, this is for you. To all my listeners from the United States, United Kingdom, I had a lot from United Kingdom last episode. Thank you so much, United Kingdom. Canada, same thing. United Arab Emirates, South Africa, and Germany, all around the world. You guys are awesome. From Minneapolis, Minnesota, Long Lake, Minnesota. Thanks, Long Lake. A lot of listeners there for that last episode. Thanks for listening, sharing, whatever you're doing. Keep doing it. I really appreciate it. St. Paul, Minnesota. Dallas, Texas. Again, a lot of listeners this time. Thank you so much, Dallas. New York, New York. Thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing. Whatever you're doing, I tip my cap to you. It means a million to me. So thanks so much, New York. Same thing with Chicago. Oakland, Eden Prairie, Minnesota. Brooklyn, New York. San Antonio, Texas. Calgary, Alberta. Pasadena, California. Littleton, Colorado. Dubai. Irving, California. Cape Town, Western Cape. Holyoke, Mass. Mass, you guys are incredible. You are so constant and consistent. I am so indebted to you. Bergenfield, New Jersey. You guys are so solid. Thank you so much. Frankfurt, AM, Maine, Hess. Always loyal. I truly thank you. Winston, Salem, North Carolina. Just to name a few. I am very grateful for all you guys who take time out of your life to listen to this show. Here I am sitting in the basement doing the show. And I'm thinking, hey, where are you? When are you? You might be listening to it the next day, 3 weeks from now, 2 days from now, might be middle of the night, but you're listening. And that proves that you like movies as much as I do. I love sharing movies. That's my single goal here, is give you guys all the information you can. Because you're the jury. You make up your own mind. And it's such a thrill to me to give evidence like this. And so maybe if it's a movie you've never heard of, probably not this one, but sometimes it's like that. There's a movie out there I might present to you. You know, like, I have never heard of this. I'm going to check it out based on this, you know, these great interviews. That's the goal here at the Cinema Judge. And I get such a thrill when I see people listening to all different kinds of episodes from all over the world. I truly tip my cap to you. And just one other little tidbit. In case you've listened to back catalog, you know, to any of my shows from long ago, and you don't hear me shout out, I'm not being rude. It's just trying to read the ones from past episodes or trying to figure out what new person listened to an old episode is almost impossible unless I take a screenshot and of every episode and try to go back and look. But don't think for 1 second I don't appreciate those backlog listens, because it's so cool to look back and go, wow, somebody listened to this episode, that episode, from whether it be 3 weeks ago or 2 years ago. It, you know, when you, if you like a movie or just discovering a movie and you see the podcast, you know, it's there for you. And you can learn about the movie, whether it's, you know, been out for a year or not. So that's the lowdown. But now it's the bourbon shout-out time. This week's bourbon shout-out goes out to a few people. Goes out to my brother Tom, who always has stepped up and saves my butt whenever I need it. Because just recently, we had to take care of all his family stuff. And he just stepped up, did everything. Boom, boom, boom. He's on the road doing stuff, doing real work. And he took care of everything without a blink of an eye. And I am so grateful for that. He has enough stuff on his plate, but yet still goes out of his way to take care of all this annoying stuff. And then also, I want to do a little bourbon shout out. Goes out to my cousin Steve and his wife, Caroline. They were in town. My brother and I were able to have dinner with them. I really get to see them because these two are so busy. They're brilliant people, entrepreneurs, and they have a busy, busy life. So anytime I'm able to sit down with them and just soak their knowledge in of their voyages, I eat that stuff up. Because these people are so, you know, just creative and just brilliant, for lack of a better word. So for somebody like me, you just get to, like, get inside their minds for a little bit and go, wow, that's how really successful people operate and work. You know, they sacrifice and do what they got to do. So to Steve and Caroline, it was so much fun hanging out with you two. And I look forward to doing it again, hopefully someday soon. Cheers. And now, it's the music section. This is the section where I tell you guys what I was listening to when I was making the TV version of this. Because, obviously, first and foremost, this is the TV version, or it's a TV show. And then I just convert this into a podcast. So when I'm, you know, making a TV version, I could crank tunes as long as I want because it helps me just get in the zone of editing. And to make the TV version of this, I think it took like 4 or 5 hours to do. So I always start off with, not always, but one of my go-to is, if you're listening to all the time, is the Ultimate Bee Gees. It's a double CD, so it's really long. I could live on that album. It's just so fun. I'd love it. But then I moved on to the Traveling Wilburys. They are an incredible band. They only had 2 albums, but 2 albums was just solid material. You think, who were these guys? Well, let me tell you. It had Tom Petty, George Harrison, Jeff Lynne, and the great Roy Orbison. And not to be outdone, the master himself, Bob Dylan. This band was just tight. They had so much fun. You could just hear it in their music. Do yourself a favor. Listen to the Traveling Wilburys. And then I moved on to somebody that's, you know, kind of new and compared to what I usually listen to. I moved on to Tobias Gesso Jr. His album was called Goon, G-O-O-N. I love that album. Just a guy and his piano. There's a few other instruments too, but I hope he comes out with more music because it's a such great album. That's Tobias Gesso Jr. And then I moved on to one of my personal favorites, one of those bands that, you know, when you find a band that nobody else knows about and they had maybe 1 hit or barely a hit, but for whatever reason, they hold a special place in your heart. That band for me, The Unforgiven, they had one, like maybe top 40 song called I Hear the Call. But the whole album brings me right back to this certain happy place in my time in my life. Every song just makes me not laugh, just makes me smile because it's just, they do something almost in every song and it's kind of hard to explain. But when you look on the sleeve, I used to have it on a tape. You look on the sleeve and it says gang vocals. And what they do is they do this whole, huh, every song, no matter if it's a jam song or not, they go, huh, and sometimes you could count it like they do 10 in a row. And even in a ballad, they one time, it's like they're talking real soft and whatever, and they go, huh. and again, I love the band, so I'm not being critical. It's just, there's that little sliver in my life where that was like a perfect little time, and that album just reflects that era. And everybody I always meet after, I've always told them, listen to these songs. Go on YouTube or wherever you want to go. The Unforgiven. And like I said, from I Hear the Call. A lot of those songs are almost Clint Eastwood movie based. Or not based on the movies, but the titles are Hang 'em High, The Gauntlet, and things like that. But give The Unforgiven a shot. I don't think you'll regret it. Well, that is it. My glass awaits, and I'm very, very thirsty. So cheers to you. Into the movies. So until next time, be well, be good, and I'm gone. I'm Jeff. Thanks for listening to The Cinema Judge.